I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether it's a trip to the gym, a checkup with your GP, or even a five-minute meditation, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. I'm so proud to be teaming up with Fitbit again in 2020. I want to continue on my path of self-discovery and set myself new challenges this year. Often it's only when we're tested that we're awakened to our true potential. I recently completed a 12K run in the Swiss Alps, something I never thought I could do. But with Fitbit by my side, I'm able to stay focused on my health fitness journey, continue to be motivated to go after my goals and to track my progress too. And with that, I'm surprising myself every single day. This week on the Good Glow podcast, I speak to Andrew Fitzsimons. Andrew is a brand founder, celebrity hairstylist, and a trailblazer. He moved from Dublin to Paris when he was 16 and hasn't looked back since. He worked hard and proved himself in an extremely tough industry, getting his big break in New York when he worked for Mariah Carey. Celebrities don't faze him. His mission is to be his best, creative, authentic self. He's here today to talk to me about his new collection for Primark, how he serves himself through meditation every day, and what it's like to be home. I just know you're going to love this episode. Andrew, welcome to the Good Glow podcast.
Thank you.
You are the biggest celebrity that I've ever sat down with on this podcast, so thank you for your time.
The thing is, I'm very comfortable behind the camera. That's where I usually am. It's usually about who I'm helping to get ready, so that's very strange to hear, but thank you very much.
You're home to wall-to-wall coverage of your new collection.
Yeah.
How does that feel?
Honestly, it's been a very long process creating a hair care line. There's so much that goes into it. So for a long time, the focus was never the products being released. It was always just me really focusing on how I could create a world-class, luxury-inspired hair care line that could live in a place like Primark at a price that everybody could afford. That has never been done before. So that was always my focus for like a really long time. So, and I never thought, I was like, I'm doing my thing. I'm trying to create these products and make them as amazing as I can possibly make them. To kind of open up the beauty industry and prove that you can make quality products and not charge crazy prices for the privilege. So that was always my focus. So it was only maybe like a month or two before announcing the, because everything was secret, of course, announcing the products that I was like, oh my gosh, these are going to go into the hands of people from the country that I'm from, that I left years ago. And then I started getting very stressed and very anxious, and I really relied on a lot of meditation to calm me down and be like, okay, it's okay. You have to, at some point, you have to give birth and release your child into the world and let it be what it is and, you know, and take a step back. So to come back, and especially, like, we've been going from country to country in Europe for press for the launch. And it's really been the Irish feedback that has been so incredible, because the feedback has been amazing everywhere, because I don't think people have ever encountered that. Like, it's just such a new concept. So the feedback has been amazing everywhere, but Ireland, everybody just feels very proud, which is really amazing for me, because I left Ireland so long ago and no one knew who I was, because I was a hairstylist that was going from country to country, from Paris to New York to wherever, just doing my thing, not getting a lot of recognition back home, because there was nothing. I was just, you know, trying to make it happen for myself. So to come back home now with something that I created, and that being the basis for this trip, and the amazing support that I'm getting, especially from Ireland, and people just go, I love the products, but also you're Irish and this is so inspiring. this is amazing. That's been the biggest, the thing that I'm most thankful for with this whole situation is that I'm being reacquainted with where I'm from in a whole other way. And the support has been really just mind-blowing, absolutely mind-blowing.
Well, it's a testament to you, I think, that so many people are getting behind you and we're all so proud of you. Does it feel like a different Ireland to when you left?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. It's a different country. In some ways, it's very the same. It's very similar because I feel like people's attitude is very similar. I feel like everybody's still very welcoming and everyone's still very proud of being Irish. And I think that for has always been the case. But I think just society-wise, I feel very comfortable here now. And I feel very comfortable speaking about my truth now, because my whole experience in Ireland was living in a very conservative country. Mm. For me, you know, the society is based on how, like, the laws that are for you or against you, or how society treats you, and it's individually based. But for me, as a gay person and a gay creative who doesn't fit into the normal education system or whatever, it wasn't a good place for me to grow up. It really wasn't. Ireland was not welcoming to me growing up, being a gay person. It was really hard, and I knew that I had to leave in order to survive, unfortunately. I love Ireland, and I didn't want to have to leave, but I knew that for my job and for my soul that I had to go on a quest before I could come back, and hopefully then learn something and then bring that back to Ireland, because I think that Irish people innately want to be good and want to be welcoming and want everyone to be happy and like that's our whole energy, is we want to be a community and we want to laugh together and we want to sing together and we want to dance together, and that's just who we are. So for a very long time I wasn't included in that, and I feel like now I'm coming back to a country where I really am, and gayness is celebrated and womanhood is celebrated, and that's something that we're seeing in a lot of places, but I really feel like Ireland is the epicenter of how you can completely change, and it's okay to change. It's okay to say, okay, we didn't get it right before, but now that we have the information and now that people have voices, we're going to listen to those voices and take that seriously and see what we can do to make everybody comfortable. And that's the Ireland I'm coming back to. So I'm really happy. This is my first time back in years. So I'm very excited to go out and meet people and experience the new Ireland, because I haven't before.
Oh, they're incredible words. Thank you for that. How did you feel then? You were obviously watching the same-sex marriage referendum. Mm-hmm. Were you in America when Ireland said yes? How did you feel that day?
I cried. I cried a lot. It makes me very emotional to think about that. It also makes me very emotional to think. It made me emotional really to see how everybody that I could see was just extremely, extremely excited and felt very unified. The same with the abortion referendum. It really unified people in a really positive way, in a community based way, where like we can celebrate like the Eurovision or the World Cup or like, oh, I'm proud to be Irish and blah blah blah. But to be able to use your vote and use your voice to help other people, even if it's not yourself, men voting for women, straight people voting for gay people's rights, that is a beautiful concept to me, and that's the most Irish part of the whole thing, people taking care of other people.
Wow.
You know?
You've had an amazing career so far. You've worked in Paris, New York, LA. Where did you get that work ethic? Like, before we came on air, we spoke that you left Ireland when you were 16. Like, where did that drive come from?
I have no idea. I literally have no idea. I always felt, from a very young age, I always felt very defiant. I never really believed what people were telling me about the ceiling of where I could go. Because, like, in society growing up, I never saw what my future could look like straight people were. So I had to imagine it in my own head. So I just created this, okay, well, I'm going to do whatever I need to do to be successful and happy. So that's what I did. I had to follow the beat of my own drum, because it was never presented in society. But that's my personality type. I feel like, to me, it's important to talk about these things, especially in Ireland, because there are people who don't have crazy personality like me who's like, okay, well, at 16, I'm going to move to Paris and I'm going to sleep on couches and I'm going to like do what I have to do for years and years and not get paid. Like, I didn't get paid for like 10 years. I literally was just working and figuring it out. So some people have to find their safe space in a place that is not safe for them. So for me, it was always just my self-belief. I don't know where I got it from, but thank God I had it, so I could, it didn't matter if people were like, ah, sure. Whenever I would say, oh, I want to have a Vogue cover, they're like, ah, sure, well, okay, great, so do I. Or like, I want to have this or I want to have that. And then people kind of pulling you back down. To me, that's just not helpful. To me, that's really, really toxic, to limit other people's goals or dreams. I like to encourage people because why not? Like, what? There's no downside to encouraging somebody because maybe they can do it, and maybe you can do it yourself. So maybe by encouraging someone else, you can start encouraging yourself. Because I think it's really easy to be kind to someone else. It's really difficult to be kind to yourself. So I think encouraging other people can sometimes help you encourage yourself.
You've had absolutely huge success, but like you said, you worked for years and years, and you know, you had no money and you really struggled to, like, do you really remember those days?
Oh yes, I remember the hunger. I remember, like, when you go to bed hungry for the like 10th night in a row, you remember it. I remember in New York not being able to afford the subway to get to a test shoot. And it was like, at the time, I would think it was like $175 to take the subway. And I hadn't had money for a very long time. So I had to have a giant suitcase. I lived in a place called Bushwick at the time, which is far out in Brooklyn. And I walked maybe 2.5 hours, 3 hours to get to this test shoot that I wasn't getting paid for. And they forgot to tell me that it was moved. So I had to walk 3 hours back.
Oh my God.
Over the Williamsburg Bridge and the wind and like whatever. And I didn't care. I really didn't care. I was marching. It felt like I had somewhere to go. But I felt like not only just that day, I was like, I have to keep going because I have somewhere to go in my life. So that was always what I felt. And whenever I had to sleep in a couch or I didn't have anywhere to spend the night and I had to walk around Paris city to make it till morning, it was because I knew I was going somewhere. Whenever I was walking, I was going somewhere. You know?
And were people noticing your raw talent? Like, did that give you fire in your belly?
Yes and no. For me, I think I was always interested in innovation and creating something that hasn't been created before. I'm not really into recreating. Sometimes I like being inspired by things. I'm inspired by plenty of things, but my mind has always just worked in like I want to do something that no one has ever done before. So generally people don't really understand it. So my life has just been a practice of just proving stuff to people, you know. Yeah. Like people are like, oh, well, this is how you do it. I'm like, okay, well, that's been done before. I'm doing it this way and that's how I do things. So you either step out of my way, or I'm going to have to move around you. Because that's so sometimes, yes, people will acknowledge certain things that may or may not be important to me. But generally, I've had to just do it anyway because people don't understand. And then when I do it, they're like, oh, wait, this is way better than the basic idea that I had.
Yeah, the curly blow dry. I presume that's not in your top five.
What's a curly blow dry? Oh, no.
So,
okay, what's a curly blow dry
is like if you go to the hairdressers in Ireland.
Wait, you twist the brush around and you take it out? Yeah. Okay, a curly blow dry. Okay, yes.
So you're not doing them in LA?
Yeah.
You are?
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course I am. Well, okay. I don't think I've named it anything, but okay, now I know it's a curly blow dry. Or in America, it would be a curly blowout.
A curly blowout, nice. Yeah. Can you remember your first big break?
It feels like my life has just been lots of different goals. So each little chapter or segment had like a catalyst that moved it into the next phase, I suppose. But for what I do now, working with celebrities and that kind of acknowledgement. When I moved to New York first, I had been living in Paris for a couple of years and I had a starving artist in Paris, like just working in fashion. I was always the youngest person in Fashion Week and on shoots and stuff. I was like 16 or 17 and everyone else was at least twice my age. And So it never, it just, it always felt like I was a worker bee there. When I got to New York, there's like the whole celebrity aspect to hair and makeup. And I feel like working with Mariah Carey, she was probably my first celebrity client that I worked with consistently. So she really introduced me to the world of celebrity and the world of hair and makeup artists who that is their job. They work with celebrities. Learning that whole craft, because that's a whole world and it has a whole structure of what you do, what you don't do, how you behave, how you don't behave. Mariah, going straight from like literally working with no celebrities to working with Mariah Carey was a leap. But luckily she is an incredibly kind, lovely, lovely, lovely human being. One of the nicest people I've ever worked with. One of the kindest and most thoughtful people I've ever worked with. So luckily I was with someone really nice. So I kind of learned the easy way because I learn fast. So I was able to figure it out pretty quickly. And luckily we got on really well. We have the same taste in music and we kind of bonded over that. And that I think in the whole hair, makeup, celebrity world, probably working with Mariah was my first... like when I was like, oh, I'm working with Mariah, so that means something. Does that mean something about me? Because I never like equate things or like have like. It's just like, okay, this is something that I might step into because I'm good at it. Because I really don't care about celebrities. I really do not give a hoot about celebrities. I'm learning to not curse right now. This is the first time where I've had to not curse. I'm like, I've never said I don't give a hoot before, but it's better than what I was going to say. I don't really pay attention to the concept of celebrity. I've been around celebrities for years and years and years, and there's nothing special about celebrities as opposed to anyone else.
And that's probably why they like you, because you don't treat them differently.
I'm not impressed by wealth, and I'm not impressed by fame at all, because it's not an indicator of whether someone is a nice person or not, or someone's soul is good. So that just doesn't interest me. So working with people that I like and being inspired by their style and their vibe, they're the things that are important to me. So working with celebrities is like, if you're in it to be friends with celebrities, you're not going to get very far, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Tell me about then the move to LA. Did you make a kind of, did you sit down and make a decision, okay, I'm going to move to LA, or did work just take you there?
I was living in New York at the time. I had been living in New York for almost 10 years before I moved. I was in a relationship and my partner is an actor. So we met in New York and he wanted to move to LA, and I had been working with Kendall for a couple of years, literally from her first shoot in New York as a model, her like first test shoot I did with her just by chance. I was working on a I think a commercial or an ad campaign or something. The photographer was like, oh, this agency is sending this model in, do you want to take some photos? And I really wanted to work with the photographer more because he shot Vogue covers and blah blah blah. So I was like, yeah, totally. So in walks Kendall Jenner, and who I didn't know because I didn't watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians and or any TV. But she was great. She was a great model, and we did a beautiful shoot. I think it was supposed to be one photo, and we ended up taking 10 photos and became an editorial, and then it was like everywhere. But so I started working with Kendall, and then she started booking me for every appearance that she would have in New York and Met Gala and all that kind of stuff. And then once I started working with her, then when Courtney was in town, I started working with her in New York. And I knew that at some point I wanted to move to LA, just because coming from Ireland, like the concept of living somewhere with palm trees is just like
the dream.
There. Yeah, because New York winters are way worse than anything in Ireland that you could ever, like, I'll take a cloudy, rainy day in Ireland over like an hour in New York winter. It's brutal. So I kind of wanted to move to LA anyway. So me and my partner at the time were like, okay, well, that seems like the place for both of us right now. It just felt right. And I took a chance because I didn't have any guarantees with working with anyone, especially in that family. There's no guarantee. So I was taking a big chance because I was leaving behind everything that I had built for 10 years in New York. But my whole life was based on taking chances and self-belief. So it's like, okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to make sure that it happens. Like, what if it doesn't? Well, what if it does? So, I moved to LA, and I was like, okay, well, hopefully I'll be able to work with Courtney a couple of times. And now
You're part of the family.
Now I'm part of the family. Now I work with most members of the family, and I'm busy and booked and blessed.
Because they have that reputation of being like so professional, so mm-hmm. down to earth, and I presume that's why you click with them.
Yeah. I'll work with anybody who I like their style, they're kind, mm-hmm. professional. That's about it, honestly. Yeah. I want my day to be enjoyable, and yeah. I want other people's days to be enjoyable. I want to brighten up other people's days, and I want them to brighten up my day too. And I want to have fun. So if I'm able to have all of that and be paid, I want to love my job, because I do, and I don't want to ever not love my job. So working with all of the clients that I have, not only that family, I enjoy working with all of my clients, and I work with really nice people. And if I think that someone doesn't have the energy that I respond to, then it's not a match.
I talk about finding your tribe a lot on this podcast.
That was a huge part of my life. Yeah.
Yeah. Where is your tribe?
My tribe are the weirdos, the hippies, to me, I never realized, I wrote this article for Nylon magazine a couple of years ago where I did a lot of work on myself, and I was like, what type am I? I never had a type. Like in gay world, there's tribes, and like in life, there's tribes and blah, blah, blah. And I just never fit into anything. And I was like, oh, I'm alternative. Like with music, I always like the music genre that I liked the most amount of music was alternative. And because I think that I've always just like seen things between the lines, or I didn't want to limit the amount of color that I could see in the world. So I think I've always responded to alternative. So generally, if you grew up listening to The Cure, I'm your friend. If you currently listen to Lana Del Rey, I'm your friend.
Cassie. Yeah.
I listen to Morrissey in the gym when I'm running, like sad music. That's who I am. But I would say my tribe are creatives. I would say my tribe are people, seekers. Mm. I believe that I'm a seeker. I feel like in the gay world, I never figured that one out. It, like, cause there's like bears and cubs and twinks and blah, blah, blah. I never fit into, I think I'm alternative there too. I'm just alternative. That's my tribe is alternative.
We spoke about your mum and your sister and how they come to LA to mm-hmm. spend time with you. Is family very important to you?
Yeah. Well, family to me personally is like any other relationships in my life. It has to work for me mm-hmm. and it has to add and not take too much away. So my relationships with everybody are, and the way I kind of figure things out is like, does this serve me? And relationships have to serve me. And if something is toxic, it's not for me, and it's not the vibration that the frequency that I want to operate on. And I don't want anything to pull my vibration down. So even with family, with friends, with anybody, you have to be on my vibration or not F with my vibe, and then we're cool. Otherwise, across the board, if you F with my vibe, then I'm going to be over here. So luckily, my sister is my best friend. We grew up despising each other. Like, woo! Like, I could say the H word. We hated each other. We really did. And I resented her because she was the youngest. Like, I got all the attention, and then she took it all away. Mm-hmm. She would literally, okay, so we'd be in the living room and my mom would be in the kitchen or something, and we'd be watching TV. I'd be there and she'd be over here on opposite sides of the room, and she'd go, ouch! And I'd be like, what? And my mom would come running, Andrew hit me! I'm like, what the fuck are you talking? And my mom would be, Andrew, why can't you leave your sister alone? And I'm like, what? And then she starts fake crying, and then she hugged my mom, and then she just looks and smiles at me like this. And I'm like, we really did not get along. We just didn't get each other. As kids, we didn't get each other. And then I think maybe when I was in my early 20s, she was in her late teens maybe, or maybe she was in her early 20s. I came back to Ireland for a couple of days to visit, and I think we were just in a bar together or something, or maybe it was my mom's birthday or something, and we were just like, okay, let's hang out once and see, do we like it? Because we really had just a very vague relationship. That's my sister. Hey, how's it going? Blah, blah, blah. And we had a couple of drinks, and then we ended up at the George. Now, I hadn't been to the George since I was like 14 or 15. We ended up in the George. We were drinking probably like fucking Smirnoff Ices and dancing to Kylie Minogue. And we're just like, oh, I was just like, oh, you're cool. And she's like, oh, you're cool too. And we became friends and now we're best friends. She was in New York when we shot the Primark campaign. She stayed in my hotel room last night. She was in London with me yesterday and the day before. She is my number one fan and I am her number one fan. So I'm very, very lucky. I was doing a meditation in LA just before I got here because I felt a little bit anxious. And it was a loving kindness meditation. And sometimes you have to see yourself from someone else's eyes in order to see your own purity and not judge yourself and not use your ego. And in the meditation, I said, who is one person who only gives and doesn't take anything away from your life? And I went through the list of everyone in my life, and it was my younger sister. And I'm just so grateful to have her because the love is just so pure. So I'm so grateful to her. And then there's my mom, who I love. My mom has been my supporter since day one. I left school at 13, like almost 14. My mom helped me through this whole situation. I don't know how she was able to be supportive, because if my child at 14 was like, I'm leaving school and I'm starting my career, I'd be like, no, the fuck you're not.
Yeah.
But she listened to me. And after a while, after a couple of years, I was like, she didn't have the tools to help me as a gay person. So that I had to navigate by myself. And that was extremely difficult. But I said to her the other day, I was like, thank you for just stepping out of my way. You could have, as a parent, really been like, look, this is what I think you should be doing. You should be in school. You should be doing this. You should be doing that. She stood out of my way and said, I'm going to support you. Now, she didn't have to do anything, but she just had to support me and love me. And that's what she did. So
what a gift that was to you.
Like, to a young child who I knew, I didn't have the verbiage for it at the time, but at school, I went to a school. I won't say what it is because... whatever. I went to a school, and a rugby school, and it was the most toxic environment that a sensitive, creative, gay child could ever be in. It was very emotionally violent. And I knew that I wouldn't have made it out alive. Had I not left school, I wouldn't have made it out alive. And a lot of gay children don't, unfortunately. Unfortunately, life can be too painful in environments like that. And had my mom not been supportive, it could have been a whole different situation. So I'm very, very, very grateful to my mother for my life several times over. And also, yeah, being my support system. I think relationships with mothers are always layered because they're not your friend at the end of the day. My mom is my friend, but like, she's my friend, but still my mom. So I want to have that relationship with her still. I still want her to be my mom. I still want her to give out to me. So it's not the exact same as my sister, because me and my sister argue when we fight. With my mom, it's like, I still want my mom to be my mom. So we have that little like space in between that is mother and son rather than friends as adults, which I need. It's really nice to have my mom, and then she comes over to, like, she came over for Christmas this year. Well, she always comes over. She invites herself for Christmas. And so I live in LA, everyone's vegan. So I was like, mom, my friends are like, it was my friends and me and my mom for Christmas Day, and I was like, mom, we're gonna have to like cook vegan Christmas dinner. And you'd swear I told her, like, I don't know, that the sky was purple. She was like, Andrew, how do you do that? No butter. And I was like, no butter, mom. No cheese. And she was going down the list. No bacon. I was like, definitely no bacon. Going down the list. And every couple of days, she'd be like, okay, so I'm going to make mashed potatoes. Now, you know, that's like almond milk or oat milk, and then vegan butter. Oh, okay. Forget it. Forget it then. And I'm like, okay.
So there was no turkey and ham that day?
No, we made vegan shepherd's pie as the main. Oh, it's delicious.
Nice.
And we sneak. Okay. My vegan friends, I'm sorry. There was real butter in there. No, we had to get Kerrygold. My mom, she was adamant. She was like, just don't tell anyone. Sorry. Oh, sorry, mom. I spilled the tea.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was mostly vegan. It was 99.9% vegan. My mom comes over for Christmas. We just have a lovely time. She cooks. She cleans around my house. She moves things so I can't find them. Typical mom stuff. So, yeah, I have a very friendly mom relationship with my mom. It's very close. I talk to her on the phone twice a day in the morning. And yeah, great relationship with my sister. And then I have my dad who's there, and my older sister and aunts and stuff that are all very supportive too. But I'm very, very, very close with my mom and my sister. Yeah.
I'll get back to my conversation with Andrew in just a minute, but first I want to give you an update on my Fitbit. By being on Fitbit, it allows you to get to know yourself better, to understand your health with data and insights that are unique to you. As I always say, knowledge is power, and Fitbit provides data about your health and well-being to help empower and support you in leading a balanced and healthy lifestyle. I love being able to track my sleep, keep an eye on my resting heart rate over time, as well as capture key stats from my workouts. I'm so happy to have Fitbit on board as it helps keep me focused and on track with my goals and training. Now, back to Andrew. What's life like in LA? Like, can you allocate me time into your everyday life, or are you really busy?
Yes, I don't go out. I don't go to bars. I don't really drink. I spend my days working, and I live in the Hollywood Hills, but I work in Calabasas, which is about an hour away, and if there's a lot of traffic, it's more, and I have to take the 101, which is the busiest highway in the whole country, twice a day, sometimes more, to get to work. So it's a lot of traveling. It's a lot of podcasts, thankfully. Like, thank God for podcasts. It's a lot of traveling. So my day is... Any hair or makeup artist or anyone who works with a lot of people knows that how draining, like, you could be with the nicest people in the world, being around other people's energy all the time and putting yourself second and being there to help another person, after a while, after a couple of hours, it's very, very draining. So for me, I don't want to go to a bar and be around a load of people. I can't, to be my best self the next day and be my brightest me the next day, I have to self-conserve and practice a lot of self-care every single day. When I don't practice self-care every single day, I'm tired, I'm cranky, I'm sad, I'm depressed, I'm anxious. Things that parts of my personality that are there that I'm not trying to feed. I want to feed energy and love and compassion and gratitude. So generally, when I'm done with work, I go home. I listen to music. I luckily have a beautiful, beautiful home in the hills, the view of the Hollywood Hills. And I just sit outside. I ground myself. I look up at the stars and remember my insignificance. And I really just try to focus on the soul me rather than the personality me, because the personality me, I know how that works and how to operate within that all day, every day in work and my interactions with other people. Generally, I'm alone in the evening by myself, because that's how I recharge. I'm an introvert, so I get my energy from being alone, and my energy is taken away by being with other people. I love being around other people, and I love, you know, shining my light. But in order for me to be able to shine my light, I have to recharge my soul batteries by myself. So self-care is very important. It's every single day. It's meditation. I do conventional meditation and guided meditations. I listen to Dharma talks. I read a lot of books on spirituality. But I also practice a type of meditation of a constant form of meditation of noticing. I use nature and plants as cues to remember to be in the moment. So whenever I see a plant or a flower or a leaf, I remember, oh, wait, just come back to the present, come back to yourself. And that's how I stop from being in fast forward, because from my personality type, it's very easy for me to go into the past or live in the future, and none of those things exist. There is no past, there is no future. There's only this ongoing state of now. So for me, I use a type of meditation where I use cues of nature to bring myself back into the now.
Wow, that's amazing. When I was healing from cancer, like, I really use nature as well to kind of, oh, it's just so powerful. And before,
and
like,
teacher.
Yeah.
Teacher.
And you know, in Ireland, it's freezing all the time. Mm-hmm. You don't really want to go outside.
Yeah.
But I made sure to get outside every day, and that just did so much for me.
Your soul.
Yeah. So do you do anything else? Do you do yoga? Do you like work out?
Yeah, I usually, I work out once or twice a day usually. I really love cardio. I'm trying to gain weight right now, so it's like, so it's not good to do that much cardio, but for, I have to do it for my mind every day. So I do a thing called Soul Cycle. They have them, I think there's one in London now, but they, hopefully there'll be one in Dublin so I can do it when I'm here next time. If anyone wants to start Soul Cycle Dublin, please do it immediately. I do like a cycling class. Soul Cycle is like, it's like very, very intense cardio. It's for 45 minutes. I think you burn like something like, I'm not interested in burning calories, but I think you burn something like 1500 calories in like 45 minutes. It looks like you just got out of a swimming pool when you leave. No one's cute. So I do that like a couple of times a week. For my mind, and I also there's certain instructors who have certain types of music, so I usually go to hip hop classes because that's my favorite music. So I'll go. It's a dark room, and you're doing choreography, you're doing push ups, you're doing weights on the bike, and you're sprinting and all this different stuff. So I need that to just be in a dark room and just be left alone with my body. A similar concept to yoga, where you are just in your body and you're feeling all your body. And I use it as a form of gratitude. Whenever I'm cycling, in my mind, I'm going, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Especially like when my body's really hurting, I'm saying, thank you for keeping on moving. Thank you for, because that's, so like my body and nature are like proof of resilience, of like how your body can work for you if you allow your mind to sync up with your body. So I use exercise as a form of meditation to connect to my body and thank it for working, because I think the only time you're in that headspace is when your body doesn't work for you and you're connected to your body and it's a different type of relationship. So I find it very, very important for me to be very grateful for the things that I have in my life, outside of my body and inside of my body.
You have such a beautiful way of looking at things, by the way. So thank you so much for this. I'm learning so much. Tell us about your collection for Primark. I was in Penneys in Dundrum yesterday.
I'm not in like outside Europe anymore. Yeah. I can call it Penneys again because I'm like Primark. And I was like, what is Primark? It's Penneys.
But I was in there yesterday. It's your collection is so you.
Mm.
It's very true to who you are, isn't it? Like the colors.
Yeah.
Like tell us about it.
I was really, really lucky to work with such an incredible team in Primark. Really from the get-go. It's like any like relationship or business relationship. It's like, okay, well, I want to do this and we want this, and trying to figure out what it's going to look like. And in that space, I was like, I'm only really interested in creating something that I have control over, that I'm able to see through to the very end and be fully proud of releasing into the wild. And Primark had that belief in me that I would be able to create a comprehensive, world-class, celebrity-inspired collection of hair collection that would be available for everybody. They had that belief in me, so that gave me the permission to be creative, to really work hard on creating making each formula the best possible formula that I possibly could. And each product to me could be sold for any price, for real, for any, like, crazy expensive, whatever. I wanted these products just to work so beautifully, and people to go, okay, well, Primark is a place where I can go and get this level of quality. And I'm getting messages from people going, oh, I went and I bought the whole collection. I was so excited. And it was like €25 for everything. And I'm like, that's amazing. Now you have a full, beautiful, luxury-inspired hair care system that works. And like, you have everything you need. You should have everything you need. You shouldn't be like, oh my God, it's so expensive. I can only buy one thing. And I would have been heartbroken if I heard that. I grew up with not a lot of money. I saw the products my mom had to use because we know what the Irish moms, like, they put themselves last. So my mom would be like I'm sure very liquid effing as shampoo, you know, at some points. So it was really, really important for me from the get-go to find a home for my products that would make them accessible for everyone, but still have attention to detail, still be luxury inspired. Like every detail I thought about, and Primark were able to help me realize. I'm really, really, really thankful to Primark for allowing me to have that creative reign. And like any true collaboration, it was fully a team effort. And I think everyone was just really excited because it just hadn't existed before. There's no luxury hair care range where you can buy something for €2, you know, that doesn't exist in the world. So everyone was really excited about it, and everybody knew, like, if it was what we thought it was going to be, people were going to go crazy for it too. So it's still in the first week of sales, but I think that people are responding to it the way I hoped they would.
Yeah.
It's been an incredible collaboration, and Primark have been amazing.
It's just incredible, and I think it's a gift to us because we're used to seeing like the glam life on TV and stuff like that. So it's a little bit of that for us.
Yeah.
You
know? The thing is, like, you should be able to. I was just thinking about everybody that I grew up with, and everybody's moms and everybody's aunties and everybody's daughters, seeing that and me being a part of that somewhere else, I was like, why can't people have that luxury? Why is that only designated for people with loads and loads and loads of extra money? That's not fair, because I knew that it doesn't cost that amount. It's a concept. Luxury is a concept. So for me, I was able to go, okay, well, I'm going to sell luxury for a really low price so people can have the look, feel, scent, and visuals that everyone else gets to have when each product is €50, but be able to afford everything. Like, go in and literally, I wanted to, when people went and saw my collection in Primark, go in with their cash or their credit card or their debit card or their laser card, go in and just act like a princess. Okay, I'll have that one, charge it to my card, and
amazing.
And that's what everyone's doing, so it's really exciting. I'm very proud of the collection.
Amazing. And it traditionally in interviews, the last question would be what's next, but I don't live my life like that anymore. So I try to live in the now. So I just wanted to say to you, to wrap it up, enjoy this moment.
Thank you.
This is your time, and this is your moment. So enjoy everything about this week, and welcome home.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be home. I'm so excited to be back in Ireland. As soon as I got in last night, I was like, I'm home. And everything is familiar. The accents are familiar. The people are familiar. It just felt like I just fit back into a groove here, but in a completely different, empowered way. So I'm allowing myself to enjoy it. And this week is, to me, it's a celebration of a lot of hard work over the past year or 20 years. Thank you. And I'm going to. And our launch party's tonight, and I'm going to have so much champagne, and tomorrow's going to be awful, but I'm going to be
able to. You deserve it. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. So much fun. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast, with thanks to Fitbit. If you're enjoying this podcast, please hit the subscribe button and leave a review. For more on my story, you can follow me on Instagram at georgie.crawford.